ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
For years, art buyers have been told the same thing.
He was an internationally acclaimed artist
whose work is available in Australia through only one gallery.
His works were selling really well.
But workers start to notice something unusual.
He is not contactable by any means.
They couldn't find any presence of him online.
In Search of the Missing Artist, a new three-part series that investigates the strange business of making art. Search Background Briefing wherever you get your podcasts.
What's Vladimir Putin been up to since the start of the Iran war? Well, he's one of its only beneficiaries. He's made billions as the oil prices spiked and Donald Trump eased sanctions temporarily. The world's attention has been diverted from his war in Ukraine, and the thorn in his side, the NATO alliance, is crumbling. Today, international relations expert Rajan Menon on Trump's threats to withdraw the US from NATO, and whether Europe can defend itself against its hostile neighbour. I'm Sam Hawley on Gadigal Land in Sydney. This is ABC News Daily. Rajan, it's often been said since the start of the war in Iran that Vladimir Putin is one of the only winners, that Russia has gained and not lost anything. What's your assessment?
Well, that is largely correct, because oil is an extraordinarily important part of the Russian budget. I think it's about 40% of all budget revenue. So two things have happened. One is that President Trump, to ease oil flows into the global economy to bring the prices down, temporarily suspended sanctions on Russia. And of course, the price of oil has gone up by about, 45% since the beginning of the war. So yes, he certainly has been a beneficiary of this, of this war in that respect.
All right. Well, let's, Rajan, look a bit more deeply at how Russia is actually gaining from this war. Now, one problem for Donald Trump, and perhaps a win for Russia, is that the military powerhouses in Europe have not come to his aid. Even though, of course, Donald Trump has asked repeatedly for help, they have said no. And he's really angry about that, isn't he, with nations like the UK and Spain and many others.
I call up France, Macron. Would love to have some help. If you could you please send ships immediately? No. Cannot do that, Donald. We can do that after the war is won. And so I learned about NATO. NATO won't be there if we ever have the big one. You know what I mean by the big one? We ever have the big one, hopefully we won't. Relationships very good with the big one, better than with NATO.
It's extraordinary. Now, one should know, and you probably know this, but just to set the stage, if you look at the NATO Treaty of 1949, it says that the collective security provision, Article 5, is operative when any of the members of NATO is attacked. Mm. The only time Article 5 has been invoked is 9/11, and it was invoked to defend the United States. But in this instance, no NATO member was attacked. A NATO member, namely the United States, attacked another country. What's extraordinary about this is there's been a sweeping kind of rebellion. I mean, it varies from intensity to country, but even Keir Starmer, who kind of looks like a mild-mannered banker and, you know, like all British prime ministers, values this so-called special relationship with the U.S., has had it with Trump and said, I'm not going to be bullied into doing this.
Whatever the pressure on me and others, whatever the noise, I'm going to act in the British national interest in all the decisions that I make. And that's why I've been absolutely clear that this is not our war, and we're not going to get dragged into it.
Incidentally, it's not just Starmer. Even people who have been seen to have become quasi-Trump whisperers, or people who've gotten Trump's confidence, like Giorgia Meloni in Italy, for example, have turned against him, most recently because of his attack on the Pope. But even before that, she also took the position that this is not our war, this is not a war we were consulted on. So I think Putin is happy looking at NATO gripped by crises that works to its advantage in many ways.
Yes, because as you say, NATO members do not have to join a war that they weren't consulted about in the first place.
Correct.
Now, of course, they've again said no thanks to Donald Trump when he requested they help with this blockade of the Iranian ports in the Strait of Hormuz. So again, they're at loggerheads with Donald Trump.
Yes, and there's a reason for that, because a blockade under international law is an act of war. So if you're enforcing the blockade, you have joined the war against Iran. Trump may not realize this, but anyone with even a cursory knowledge of international law understands it, and certainly people like Starmer and others recognize it.
All right. Well, it seems like Mark Rutte, the NATO chief, is really the only one at this point, Rajan, that is sticking by Trump. You know, he once called him daddy, of course. He says NATO members have been a bit slow to act in helping America. What do you make of how he's handling all of this?
You know, to be honest, Sam, he looks really pathetic because he's completely out of step with the alliance that he's leading. And the more he gets behind Trump and tries to take NATO into wars that its members don't want to get into, the less credibility he has, I think, among the members of the alliance. So trying to ingratiate himself with Trump, it's a kind of form of self-abasement. But beyond that, it doesn't lead anywhere, because it's not as if Trump is going to look at you next week and say, oh, Mark, you did such a great job. You supported me. Now I'm going to do this, that, or the other for you. Friendships mean nothing. I mean, look, for example, what happened after Orban lost the election in Hungary. Trump just completely stopped speaking about Orban.
Well, Mark Rutte was asked about this daddy comment quite recently at a Ronald Reagan Institute address. And yes, it appears like he will never, ever, ever live that down, Rajan.
I was not calling him my daddy, but saying, but of course, daddy has also a special connotation. And I now have to live as this the rest of my life. And I own it, and the president owns it, because he bought our T-shirts, he made a movie, Daddy is Home, and he returned to the United States. This was so funny. And this is why I like him so much.
He will not, and he's not going to get any big Christmas present from Trump. But more importantly, even if he didn't directly call him Daddy, as he tried to explain, well, in Dutch it means this, that, and the other, just the use of the word was really politically tone deaf.
Yes, indeed. Well, Rajan, Donald Trump has on numerous occasions now threatened to pull the United States out of NATO. In recent days and weeks, he's called European allies cowards and NATO a paper tiger. And he has said that Putin knows that too. Now, the Wall Street Journal has reported that these European nations are planning for this US exit. What do we know about that? They're obviously quite concerned that this is a real possibility at this point.
Yes. So I'll put my cards on the table and say that I've long been a proponent of European strategic autonomy. I made this argument first in the book I wrote in 2007, and most recently in an article that I wrote for an outfit called the Institute for Arts and Ideas in London. Having said that, this has been a catalyst, because I think NATO has fundamentally had to realize that the day will come when it cannot rely on American protections. Here are a couple of things that have happened. In 2024 and 2025, in the aggregate, each year, defense spending in NATO went up by 20%. So defense budgets are increasing. The German Bundeswehr, the German army, which was shambolic, they are now putting large amounts of money into it. There is a kind of joint defense production document that's been drawn up to reduce duplication and invest in defense industries. There is talk about, more than talk actually, serious negotiations about whether it is possible to make the Anglo-French nuclear deterrent an umbrella for all of Europe to replace the American umbrella. There are attempts to base forward many more NATO troops on the eastern flank. And so for the first time, I think NATO is taking steps to prepare for the day when it might not be able to rely on the United States. And there's no case to be made that Europe lacks whether population or wealth or technology or defense industries the wherewithal to defend itself, because it has only one significant threat: Russia. It doesn't have to be a global power like the United States with a galaxy of bases all over the world.
Right, but let's look then at the ramifications of the US actually pulling out of NATO. First, of course, Ukraine, because, of course, Ukraine has been heavily dependent on arms and intelligence from the United States during the war with Russia.
Yes, there has been this dependence. But bear in mind that under Trump II, the most recent iteration of Donald Trump's presidency, the United States ceased direct military support for Ukraine. An alternative was set up called PURL. I won't take the time to spell it out for you, but under this arrangement, the Europeans could request equipment from the United States that they then had to pay for and transfer to Ukraine. But what was delivered and at what pace and when the deliveries were made were entirely up to the United States. And the Ukrainians have long felt that Trump was kind of slow walking it. So the military dependence on the United States has long ceased, and the Europeans have stepped up. So the Europeans may not be entirely able to fill the American gap, but they are stepping up for one simple reason. Donald Trump likes to say, this is not our war, that is the Russia-Ukraine war, because we have this, quote, big, beautiful ocean separating us. Well, the Europeans cannot say that. They're joined at the hip to Ukraine in the sense that if Ukraine falls, their security future looks much more vulnerable.
And what about beyond Ukraine, though? Should these European nations be concerned that Putin could invade other nations? Estonia, Rajan is worried, Poland, right. Finland.
Right. So let me say this. It's very easy for me as an American sitting in New York City to say what I'm about to say. And I completely understand that a Estonian or a Latvian or a Finn, for example, would feel entirely differently. But here's the way I look at it. The Russians have fought Ukraine, a manifestly weaker adversary, for longer than it fought Hitler's armies. It has sustained 1.1 million casualties, that is, dead and wounded. Maybe about 300,000 of those are deaths. This is in a country that has a very, very low birth rate and is barely reproducing itself, and maybe even there's a net reduction in population. And then the economic consequences have been enormous, not to mention that all these destroyed areas that Russia now claims have to be rebuilt. So my view is, given the poor showing of Russian army, given the bad experience of the war, and given the economic cost, Russia will be licking its wounds for some time to come. The Russia that will emerge from the Ukraine war is a Russia that can be handled by a robust European defense posture much more easily than the Russia that was before the Ukraine war.
Russia might be depleted, but the threat is still real, isn't it? Because, as we saw, the UK's Defence Secretary, John Healey, he recently revealed Russia had sent submarines to spy on British cables and pipelines in waters north of the UK.
And to President Putin, I say, we see you. We see your activity over our cables and our pipelines. And you should know that any attempt to damage them will not be tolerated and will have serious consequences.
So, I mean, that would be a worry for NATO nations.
Yes. Yeah, you raise a very good point, because it's not just tanks crossing the border. Russian activity against NATO can be manifested in many, many different ways. Cyber warfare, for example, trying to cut undersea cables, espionage, and so on. And that will continue. I had in mind at the moment just the question of, can Russia make a sustained assault against the combined resources of non-US NATO, and I'm skeptical that it can. Now, there are experts here who would disagree with me, and I'm sure, again, I want to emphasize this. I understand that people in East Central Europe will have a different idea, but I think it is a problem that Europe can manage on its own if it puts its mind to it.
What's your view? Do you think Donald Trump will jump? Do you think he will remove the United States from NATO after all of these years, all of these decades?
You know, I'd rather bet on seeing a unicorn on Central Park and walk tomorrow than on whether Donald Trump will do X or Y. The behavior has been so erratic that it's becoming increasingly difficult to know what he will do or what he won't do. So, you know, anything is feasible. Nothing would surprise me anymore.
Rajan Menon is a professor emeritus of international relations at the City College of New York and a senior research fellow at the Saltzman Institute at Columbia University. This episode was produced by Sydney Peed and Anna John. Audio production by Sam Dunn. Our supervising producer is David Cody. I'm Sam Hawley. ABC News Daily will be back again on Monday. Thanks for listening.